if you want to be a guest, please email me. I have received so many emails of people that are excited and passionate about being a guest on this show. The process is time consuming. I go through about an hour long pre-interview and I determine where you'd fit best in the season. So if you've gone through the pre-interview process, or we've messaged back and forth via email and haven't gone through the pre-interview process, I'm not ignoring you. I promise. There's just a lot on my plate and I am one person. So that being said, I look forward to talking with every one of you that is interested in being on this podcast. Y'all are amazing and I honestly could not do this podcast without the support that I receive from each one of you. So thank you so much.
This belief system, this just fundamentalist extremism, you are so isolated and your whole world changes. And then she's now responsible for children, the buddy system. Mm-hmm. She's 10 when she receives her first buddy. And it's just the way that she even describes it like that, like she got her first buddy at 10. It's almost like getting a Barbie doll or a baby doll. And you're like, nope, I got a human life at 10 years old that I'm now responsible for. And I didn't really go through parentification like that. My brothers were very close in age to me. So again, without a large family, I didn't experience that. But I thought, how hard to grow up and have this love of a parent and then to start seeing your parents' attention get so diluted amongst so many family members. And now you're having to give that love to children that your parents really should be the ones doing that to in the first place.
Welcome to the Focus on Your Own Family podcast. Fundamentalist evangelicalism impacted a generation. We survived physical, psychological, mental, and spiritual abuse. We survived the Focus on the Family movement, and we want to talk about it. Trigger warning, guests will be sharing stories of domestic violence, child abuse, and animal abuse. Please listen with caution. Thank you. This is Lindsay. Here is her story.
Hey, Lindsay, how you doing?
I'm so good. I'm so glad we're back again with each other.
Yes.
On I don't know how many times we've recorded all the things we've recorded, but here we are again, and I'm so excited.
I am too. And I have to start this by saying you have become such a good friend to me. And I'm so very thankful for you. You're so much further along in this process. And there's just, dare I say, a wisdom you carry. And I don't mean that in a funny way. I genuinely mean,
I don't take it that
way. You're really great. But honestly, it's, for me, it's a joy to watch you live your life and knowing what you did come out of and just watching you live your life. It's encouraging and You carry a tremendous strength and resilience with you and what you have built. I'm really proud to see that. So
anyway, Steph, thank you. Babe. We've been through the trenches, really.
We have.
I'm just probably about 10 years older than you are.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
We'll have 50? An age off. No.
Because I'm going to be 40
we'll
in
an
March.
Age off. Okay. Maybe we're not that far. You're going to be 50.
I know.
No. Okay. Not. All right. I'm 45. There I outed myself. Yeah.
Look, you aren't 45.
We've been through it,
though. You are just celebrating your 16th year of being 29. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Beautiful, beautiful. Love that recovery.
It's your sweet 16.
There you go.
Look at you.
That's adorbsies.
Mm-hmm. There you are. Okay. We both read Jill Duggar's book. And That's why I am having you back, because I picked this book up. That's a lie. I bought it on Audible and I was listening to it and texting with you. And I felt you were on your way. First off, you're on your way to Milan. And I don't think that we should just like gloss over that. You did Fashion Week. You're officially like that friend when I see their photos. I'm like, I'm friends with her.
Look at, so she cute. Does hair and makeup for models. I'm friends with her.
You're so fun. I think when I listened to Jill's book, I couldn't believe I actually listened from beginning to end on my flight from LA to New York. I binged it. I started in the airport and I started just making just random notes as I was listening, just so I could continue to focus. Cause when you're moving around an airport, there's so much going on. But from even the first story that she told, I was just hooked in. Yeah. And so when I got on the plane, I sat down, I'm waiting for everyone else to board. And I'm just like furiously making these notes. And I was like, surely by the time like I get to the middle of this book, I'm just going to be like, okay, I can calm down. Not that I was hyper, but I was just like, wow, there's just so much here that is just like rapid firing through my mind as I'm listening, because I too was listening to audiobook. But I was like, this is not stopping. This is like, from the moment it starts to the very end, there is something in every chapter, in every paragraph that just I felt like I could assimilate with. I validate with Jill. And I don't know, my notes are crazy. There are so many notes that I have for this book. And I'm just so, so, so proud of her. Mm-hmm. This was a lot of work. This was a lot of work to put together.
Agreed. I too, when I was listening, the first few chapters, and really so much more than that, Sean and I would listen to in the car. And he told me, you do not have to wait for me. So I would listen to it and then he'd pick up. And there was so much, like when she was talking about bathing suits and modesty, when she was talking about living in the world, but not of it, and how vast, even inside of Dobson v. Gothard, I was definitely more living in the world and not of it. And Gothard, it was like, no, you happen to be living in this world, but you are very much set aside. I'm so appreciative of that, how she characterizes that, because I could relate to a point. And then I thought, oh, I definitely want to talk to Lindsay about this. And I was waiting for that caveat from you of like, okay, look, major trigger warning, chapter ... And I was actually the one that was texting you, not knowing you had already read it.
I find it fascinating because the contrast being Ginger's book.
Yes.
I didn't write anything down. I was, and I listened to it as well. And I was so upset at it. And yet I respect the fact that she's been through so much. She too is a victim. This book just hit. It hit everywhere. Yes. It needed. Yes. To. And from the very first story she tells about being on the sled and the potential defrauding, that her mother runs out and tells her, you and Derek can't be on the sled together and this is inappropriate. And all of a sudden she's like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that this could be something like that. Derek, we have to stop. We have to get off the sled. I'm like, how old is she at this point? And I was like, this is perfect. This is exactly where this should start, with a very bizarre, not normal way of living your life in your adulthood. And it's all because of the way that her parents chose to raise her. And so that just started me off, and my brain was just rapid firing as I was listening to it.
Yeah, it's incredible. There are things that seemed so normal. And still, when we tell these stories, they still feel completely normal. And
yeah,
I have noticed I'm having to learn to gauge what normal is based on somebody else's facial expressions when I tell the story, or when I say it in someone's comments, like, whoa, that wasn't normal. Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and pick apart why it wasn't, because clearly I need to regauge what normal is. Mm-hmm. And I sense that she was going through that too. And you, as you're reading this, because it probably felt so normal, and then you realize, wow.
And I was so along the journey with her. Yeah. She would say something about Knoxville, and I'm like, yep, nope, absolutely, 100%. You were excited to go because you got to be with like-minded people and they all dressed like you, and there was no need to have to censor yourself in a way that you either wouldn't look odd to people, or in a way that just wouldn't connect with others. Like you could just be you because everybody had that collective understanding of the education of the Institute and Basic Life Principles seminars, the wisdom booklets that we were getting trained under. We all looked the same. We were all wearing the same thing. It just looked like a clone army of everyone in a sea of navy and white. And a lot of the parents would do the same. They would, you know, they loved dressing everybody up and just navy and white sea of people. But stuff like that, I didn't have a large family, but I did have a family that we were isolated. My parents mm-hmm. didn't want us to be in the world. They didn't want us to have worldly friends. With Jill, it's really fascinating to me as you go through her book, you realize that her family was her immediate community. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't a community outside of, because even they start a home church, like family church. And you're just like, I can't imagine not having a lot of outside source of anything. At least with my life, we went to a church that had normal youth that went to public schools and weren't homeschooled. And so you always got a little bit of like rubbing elbows with the others.
Yes.
Seeing how they dressed or listening to how they spoke and realizing that you didn't have like the cool way of talking, even though you knew you couldn't use the word cool or awesome unless it was like, God is awesome. But I couldn't say, wow, that's totally awesome. That's really cool or rad. You could not say those things because they were too of the world. With Jill, just from the very onset of all of this, I found it interesting that she came. Like her story starts with the sled, but then she moves into how when they were younger, it was only her and her other three siblings that were really like tight with their dad, Jim Bob. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, like, this was the life that she seems to hold on to with cherished memory. Like she really loved that time. I don't know that I can equate to having a time that I really remember where I had that in my life. I sometimes feel like my life started at 8 when we got into ATI, and I only remember bad public school experiences prior to that. I don't really remember my home life. And so I remember 8 years old, ATI, things got really small in my world. I feel like with her having this large community of family, that's it. And there was nothing else for her to pull from or associate with. It was heartbreaking to me. She has these loving years in the beginning. And then as the family gets bigger and bigger and bigger and then gets into this belief system that's just fundamentalist extremism, you are so isolated and your whole world changes. And then she's now responsible for children, the buddy system. Mm-hmm. She's 10 when she receives her first buddy. And it's just the way that she even describes it like that, like she got her first buddy at 10. It's almost like getting a Barbie doll or a baby doll. And you're like, nope, I got a human life. At 10 years old that I'm now responsible for. And I didn't really go through parentification like that. My brothers were very close in age to me. So again, without a large family, I didn't experience that. But I thought, how hard to grow up and have this love of a parent and then to start seeing your parents' attention get so diluted amongst so many family members. And now you're having to give that love to children that your parents really should be the ones doing that to in the first place.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can talk in like so many threads with this, but it just, that part blew my mind. That level of responsibility as a 10-year-old was already getting put on her.
I think something that she did a really great job of describing is that she wouldn't have had to have, first off, them having the buddy system. That was very, they talked about that in their show. I haven't seen a whole lot of episodes. However, honestly, I didn't watch a lot of episodes because I felt like I couldn't add up. I could never measure up. Like I'm like, oh, I'll never be that great of a mom. I'll never be that great of a follower of Jesus. Like I just, that's where I was. And that was in my, that was in the decade of my 20s. I would have said at the time it was convicting. It's ironic.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we growing up in fundy homes, we didn't have to have the buddy system. We were born parentified. The way that like going through these James Dobson books and looking at just other literature and media that was around that time for fundy homes, we were born with our parents believing that we could rationalize as full-grown adults. And at the age of two or three, we were disciplined with the idea that we already knew better.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that so interesting because I think that that displays how we were born parentified.
Yeah. The maturity level is thrust upon you. Like you,
yes.
It is demanded of you. And then it's just simply expected. Oh yeah, no, they're smart enough to do this. Oh, they're
exactly
wise enough to make choices, yeah, because we've indoctrinated them.
How many times I heard from my friends where a kid would fall on the ground and legit be harmed or hurt. And I would hear from my friend, oh, he's a boy. He needs to toughen up. He'll figure it out. You're fine. You're fine. You're fine. And that is the type of thing that we grew up with. You could not coddle. You could not hug. Like, I would get that a lot as a new mom. You can't do this because you're going to teach that child that it equates to this.
Yeah. Don't nurture them.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let them isolate them. One of the things, there's a couple of things that that stuck out to me. And I think I actually might have texted you about this. The book is categorized into these different, perspectives. And the first one, she writes, and even you can even kind of tell in her the way that she talks, because we both listen to the Audible or the audio, that she speaks from this like beautiful, excited innocence.
Mm-hmm.
Just like life is really great. I had a great relationship with my dad. Honestly, I don't hear about discipline. No, that was a main factor. And she does not, that there's never a part in this book where she talks about discipline, but you know, that's dark. You know, that's real, because we all know Fundy Holmes had to have that element of corporal punishment and fierce discipline.
Well, and we already know that they were following the pearls. We already know that Michelle believes in blanket training. So that conditioning, the physical harm starts at baby blanket.
Yeah. Yeah. So she doesn't cover that. And I think that's interesting. But the second, I feel like it's put in three sections, really. So we've got the first with that innocence and this is how I grew up and it was all wonderful. She's got the rose-colored glasses on. And then I think the second part is really becoming aware of the dissonance. And I think it's fascinating that it's like Derek enters and that dissonance becomes more and more, because she talks about how Jim Bob would bring this guy on to have a conversation with her. And it was forceful. It was intense. It was intentional. And it's, you can almost tell. And then just in the little bit of the nuances, like she feels this is not normal, but she's not saying it's not normal. And then the chasm that is the dissonance, it closes. And then we start to see the last section of the book, the last third of the book, where she's really becoming aware Derek is not being as gentle. He's not holding back. He's being more like, no, this is absolutely not okay. I'm seeing these problems. And I really appreciate, I can't tell you how much I appreciate this, because it takes you through the evolution that is leaving a background like this, that is leaving a cult. And I don't know if it was deliberate, but I love how it was segmented like that. Did you feel like that too? Or did you get other...
I think that's a fair assessment. I think from the very first story in the first chapter of the book, I felt that she had unpacked a lot of this through therapy. The way that she was speaking, the way that she was articulating everything. And even, again, when you listen to the audiobook, it's very different from if you're just reading the words, because you get to hear her inflection and you get to hear her compassion for herself. You get to start feeling her fear, her rage, her anger.
Yeah.
She gets very cold and controlled, and I don't mean that negatively. When she's talking about the experiences that she had with Jim Bob when she's older, and he's in that mediator conversation with her and Michelle and Derek, and he like looms over her and is like yelling at her, and she goes into the fetal position on the couch. I felt that so much. And as she walks you through the story of herself, like you said, these three different sections of her journey, you do start to see where things just begin to unravel. And I think when it comes to the idea of deconstruction or trying to walk away from a high control group, you do have this middle space that is just messy as hell. It is so messy. It is so confusing. People want you to stay the way that they made you to be. They don't want you to change. And I think you see definitely Jim Bob is prevalent in this book of watching him unravel at not being able to, quote, control her any longer. Mm-hmm. And for every moment that would happen where she gained a little bit more ground for herself, you saw Jim Bob kick back to try to regain the ground for himself in her control. And I totally resonate with that journey. I know what that is like. I know what it feels like when you have parents that just keep wanting you to toe a certain line. They want you to have a certain narrative. They do not want you deviating from it. And for a long, long time, I thought, oh, it's just control. It's just control. Yes, it's control, but it's control out of fear, I think. Fear of everyone else finding out what a horrible person you are.
Yeah.
They don't want you to talk. They don't want you to share because now they're going to be the villains. But they've been the villains all along. Jim Bob became a villain. I don't think in the beginning that he necessarily was. It sounds like he loved his kids. He'd take them to work with them. He would spend so much time with them. But as he grew too, and more than likely because of IBLP, as he got further and further into his indoctrination, he started to feel the power and dominance of patriarchal control that he was afforded and given through the fundamentalist movement. And I think it ruined him and in essence created such a horrible experience between him and all of his children, this control that he has had. And then she very bravely goes into some discussion about what happened with Josh and how that was dealt with. And the fact that she truly believed Josh was sent away for a while. And when he came back, I believed he was okay, that he was changed, because that's the narrative that the parents were spinning.
Yeah.
And it's just watching her own parents. I know it's not my story, but I feel like the parallels are just there. I know what it's like to be told something and you're like, okay, I'm going to believe you, because who else is there? I'm not given any other opportunity to believe anyone else in my life. Maybe the pastor of the church, but you would never bring personal things to a pastor in a church, especially as a young lady. For me, I didn't trust women, so I wasn't going to tell like the pastor's wife so that she could tell the pastor.
Yep.
She would just tell the prayer group, and then the whole church would know something. So I felt her isolation. But I, like you said too, I appreciated and I'm really proud of Derek for being there for her and being a voice that could stand up to Jim Bob, especially because he wasn't raised this way. He was not raised like this. And so I think he was able to see with fresher eyes just how wrong so much of this was. And I think for a long time, when you're a new married couple, you respect your family, you respect your in-laws, you're in new territory of understanding the dynamics of your spouse's relationship with their family. But at some point, enough is enough. I really love that in the second half of the book, you really see how she and he together create this bond of strength. And you see it in the documentary. You see him sitting there with her. And at one point she just didn't want to go on trying to talk about Josh. And he speaks up and he supports her. And I'm just over the moon that she was able to find somebody, that she got lucky And I genuinely say lucky, because there are so many fundy boys that she could have been married off to that would have been just like Jim Bob.
Yeah.
And she got really lucky to have such a fabulous guy who is willing to come up to bat for her and try to support her. And I know that they still have a lot of growth. I know people are coming at them still saying, well, you should say you're sorry and apologize for X, Y, and Z. I fully understand that. But this is a journey, and I mean a long journey. They are literally going on the Lord of the Rings journey here of just trying to get to the deconstruction. They're going through it right now. And I think in time, because they are heading in a positive direction, it seems still, I think at some point they will come around to realizing some of the wrongs. But we also have to understand that they've been deeply indoctrinated and in a very, very small community that has just been an echo chamber of judgment and bigotry and hate against things that they don't understand.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you to those that have reached out with your support. Whether you have left a review, if you haven't left a review, this would be a really, really good time to leave a review. Read every single one of them. So thank you. And for those that are subscribers to my Patreon, thank you. It means so much. One of the new features that I am adding for my paid Patreon subscribers is the chat feature. And this is just a way that we can all continue this conversation that we're having in the podcast. And if you are not a paid subscriber, unfortunately, the chat feature won't be available to you. But you can be a free subscriber and you'll just get the weekly newsletters. Y'all are amazing. And I honestly could not do this podcast without the support that I receive from each one of you. So thank you so much. Yeah, a couple things, knowing a bit of the backstory, and this book just did such a great job. She did a phenomenal job with articulating what it was like to grow up in front of the cameras. And I know, oh my gosh, like when she was saying, this is our ministry. This is like, it's, oh my gosh. Cause you just, it's, I can't even articulate how much I resonated with that, because, well, the world doesn't understand it. This is our ministry. The world is always going to look at this as we're doing the wrong thing. And that is just confirmation that we're doing the right thing. And why she felt blindsided, because they completely shrouded her in covers, basically. Like, you will not know the truth. When they, the whole time, like, Jim Bob knew how to navigate the world. He had the tools, he had the ability to do that. And he took that from the girls in the family. Like, they didn't know, they didn't have life skills. They didn't have street smarts. They didn't have the ability to navigate contracts and to understand, like, what I'm signing at the age of 22 or 23 can have a lasting impact, because Jill still thought, I'm not making money. It's all part of the ministry. Because in ministry, you don't make money. And I'm happy that she laid out all this stuff with hers and Derek's organization. And she talks so fondly about genuinely loving going to places and loving people. Now, I have a hard time with missionaries we don't even have to get into that, but you and I are probably one in the same. I can look past that because I see her genuine care and compassion to take her skills as a midwife and go to other places in the world and help women out that wouldn't have access to medical care. It's enduring. I'm not angry about it.
Because she cares about people. And you don't have to be a religious missionary to do. I think that so many people that are raised in Christianity believe that the only way they can go out and help the world in any capacity is if they're sharing the gospel alongside of whatever it is that they have a skill set for. It doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to go and colonizing another country with your beliefs. It's not necessary. I have a very difficult time with missionaries as well. And it's funny because I wanted to be one for many years. And I think that's just a desire out of, it gets stressed a lot as Christian teens that we have purpose in life.
Yeah.
And that purpose, it's, I almost would, because I've never been to college, I would almost liken it to that, where you're like, oh, when I hit this age, I'm going to have to figure out what college I want to go to, because then I'll figure out what I want to do with my life. Well, that happened for us at like the age of six or 8 years old.
Yep.
You need to get your life purpose stat so that you can start working on all of it. And if you're a girl, a woman, then you better really hurry up, because as soon as you're married, well, your ministry is only to married women and child raising. So you already have a life purpose that will start at some point. So if there's anything you want to do ahead of time, then now's the time. And I thought that I wanted to be a missionary. And I realized much later, it had nothing to do with missions. I wanted to travel.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that that was my actual deep-seated motivation. I was so shrouded in the brainwashed idea that I needed to go out and witness to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to go see cool places that I'd never been before. Now, I'm not professing to say that's Jill's desire at all,
no.
But I think given what she desires to be able to help people in their healthcare and such, I think that she wouldn't necessarily have to be a Christian or with a ministry in order to do so. There are many, many organizations out there that need help out in the world today with needy people. And she could still be a, quote, light to those people. It doesn't always have to be with a spiritual bent. But I do appreciate her heart in it. You feel her passion, that this is what she felt really led to do, that she and her husband would be able to do together. And it did break my heart that Jim Bob thwarted it. He blocked his daughter from doing something that, honestly, like if he sees TLC as his mission field, he stopped her from going out to her own mission field. And the hypocrisy in that, and the selfishness and the control, I think the control to me is the overarching theme of her entire book, is just period control. He wanted to control everything about all of his children, especially the girls. And I would say probably the only thing that I really was shocked by, because I don't really recall this in my upbringing, was that when a daughter ends up marrying a husband, you get transferred to that person's umbrella. So you're under your father's umbrella. And then when you're married, you get moved over to your husband's umbrella, because apparently you can't have your own, where it will endure the weathered storm of Satan's attacks. But she moves over to Derek, but she still has this belief system that her father has to still be respected and obeyed, even after she's been married to her own husband. And the fact that they do actually subject themselves to Jim Bob's control for a couple of years blew my mind. Because when my husband and I got married, I was like, snip all the cords. I cut everything. I was like, no, I'm not living near you. You do not get to tell me when to have a child. I'm wearing whatever the hell I want. I will drive with my windows down and rock music playing out of it if I want to in my car. This, I am now with somebody, and he will be the person in which I still believed in, like, an authority structure.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I felt like my husband was my go-to. And I think for me, it was set up more in the aspect of I didn't feel like I was educated. I didn't feel very smart. And I was really scared of the world. And he seemed a little stronger and braver than myself. And so I was okay with, okay, I'll default to him if I'm not sure about something, if I have a question, or is he okay if I wear this when I go out? And he was always okay with everything. He was even okay when I was modeling in like bikinis and things like that. It did not bother him. But for me, I'm like, oh, but I just feel like I could be doing the wrong thing. And but if he's okay with it, well, I trust him. So I'm good. And so I thought it was so fascinating that she kept defaulting to, like, Jim Bob, what does Jim Bob think? Or that they would need to ask Jim Bob. And even when she decided to wear pants, when she put on pants and went to that zoo or that botanical park or whatever that they went to, and then the family ended up actually being there too. My first thought was, did TLC arrange this? Was TLC aware of their calendars? Mm-hmm. And was that on purpose? I don't know if it was on the show, but it was just a little thing in my mind that I'm like, that, what are the odds? Like, come on. It just seemed like too staged. And I don't mean that I don't believe Jill. I just feel like I know how producers are, and especially as salacious as the Duggar family seems to have been on TLC, it wouldn't put it past producers to have little chit-chats with each other to make sure that there's these like run-ins. Yeah. But even then, the fact that she felt so worried about her parents seeing her in pants, and I was like, again, I know how that feels. I know how it feels to have that judgment of your parents when you start to break away from and no longer being the little princess and or Jilly Muffin that she was raised to and expected to always be. And yeah. Now she's pushing against those limits and trying out her own things. And they're even, Jim Bob was even upset at her as a married woman for wearing pants and called her to his house. She had to, as a married woman, drive over to his home, go up to his office and sit there and have him berate her for like, we're just so disappointed, your mother and I, da 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 da. But Ginger wears pants. Well, Ginger, talk to us first. Oh, I'm sorry, Your Highness, Your Royal King Jim Bob. Are you kidding me? The narcissism in that man is so disgusting and is so prevalent in, especially in ATI fathers. And if it's not the father, it's the mother. It's the queen. Michelle or whoever literally has the pants on in the family, because sometimes it's the man, sometimes it is the woman. We know that in Christianity. That dynamic is insane to watch. But yeah. I was so disgusted by him. And I'm like, your legacy right now is Josh in prison.
Yeah.
Your legacy right now is shiny, happy people. Your legacy, you are not going to be able to step out of some of these shadows unless you come forth and you apologize for so many things that you did wrong with your kids. And I just don't see that happening. And I don't think Jill's going to hold her breath either.
Yeah. One of the things, actually several things. I have heard from numerous people that grew up, whether it be Gothard or Dobson, mm-hmm. that the umbrella, yes, the umbrella of protection or covering, it really depends on the denomination. And for me, it was both. That umbrella is used a lot in evangelical terminology. So it's like, you're under the umbrella of this, or the under the umbrella of this. But for me, when I got married at my wedding, somebody came up to me, my aunt came up and said, you are now under your husband's umbrella. You are now under your husband's covering. And I remember thinking, of course I am. Like, yes, I am. And what I do find interesting is that I have heard from different people that the umbrella does extend past, like, yes, you're under your husband's umbrella of protection, but you're under your father's umbrella of authority. And I've heard that from, I was speaking with somebody several months ago and how they wanted to leave a church, but the dad married two kids. The dad said no. And because the dad is saying no, she's still under his authority. And in fact, the husband leaves the mom. And right. So when the husband and wife get married, the husband leaves his family and cleaves to his wife and becomes enmeshed inside of under that umbrella. So the husband does everything. And I can recall times throughout our marriage where it mattered so much what my parents thought before I considered my husband's opinion
wow.
on it. Wow. So I can remember going to my parents, like, we're thinking about doing this financial decision, or I would call my mom. I would show her pictures of haircuts that I was thinking about getting or outfits that I was thinking about buying. And it mattered so much what she thought versus the people that are in my life that are fully supportive. But that was love. Love was synonymous mm-hmm. with obedience.
Yeah.
Not actual love. So I can see, it makes so much sense to me. And I loved how throughout the book, you see her start to recognize that's not love, that's obedience. I choose this. And you start to really see that when she starts to talk about therapy and how she starts to, I'm going to say a biblical term, but cling to you. Leave and cleave, or cleave to, like, she cleaves to Derek. It's still, even just that terminology is very codependent, but mm-hmm. For the sake of this, I think that it's just like it's the evolution of things. I don't see a codependency with Derek necessarily. Anyway, so legacy, you talked about legacy. Well, actually, just before that, you talked about narcissism. And yes, I think that male narcissists or men that had a propensity for narcissism tended to go the Gothard route because it was very much mm-hmm. a headship, male headship of the home. Whereas women that had a tendency for narcissism went towards Dobson because Dobson mm-hmm. still allowed a woman to sort of have a little bit of independence. The man was the head of the home. That's very true in all of Dobson's, literature and media that he puts out. However, there's a certain, I don't know what it is. He just really speaks to women, female narcissists. Like, there's something about that. Both are horrible. And then legacy, that is something that is so key for Fundy backgrounds is this idea of legacy. Like, Dobson was obsessed with it. And I know that Gothard was obsessed with it. It's like, be a legacy of love, be a legacy for the Lord. I can remember my dad going to Promise Keepers. And when he got home, he put a giant banner in our home. Like, we had a huge bay window in the front of our house. And he put a giant banner that you could definitely see from outside. And it was like butcher block, not like wood, like a butcher block that said, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Uh-huh. And then he said, this is something I just won't forget. He put a can of dog food on the table and he said, "If I don't spend every morning in my word, in the word of God, I will eat this can of dog food because I need to have God's word before I have, like, I need spiritual nourishment before I have anything else." And so this can of dog food like stayed in the cupboard. And I remember, and this was like all Promise Keepers. And now I'm just wondering, did you go to Promise Keepers or did you go to ATI? Like, right? Can we figure this out?
Dad, I think you need some help.
I think
Like, I don't think that dog food should be the thing that keeps you doing something.
Right.
Again, it's like this repulsion. I have to be afraid of this or disgusted yes. by this to fuel me to do this. Like, why is it that hard? If you're that passionate about it, then you should be getting up every morning and going, "Hallelujah, praise this beautiful day. I'm rejoicing." And you just yeah. grab your Bible and you're like, "Here I am fervently in the Bible." If that's yeah. not coming to you, what's wrong?
But it's this.
But no one asks what's wrong. They demand right. of themselves that they are inherently wrong.
Yeah.
A can of dog
there's
food.
A lot to
I'm
unpack.
Like, wow, people are nuts.
There's a lot to unpack.
Nuts.
Yeah. I really liked how money, she did a great job of, I don't even know if she realizes she did this. She did an excellent job of saying how painting that picture, like, money isn't a god, but like, it's totally a god. So we're not going to talk about it, but we're going to everything that we do. Like, it's so manipulative. It's a house of glass, a house of cards. And it was all fake. Like, we were going and doing these things. Meanwhile, they're covering up the fact that Josh is a pedophile and Josh molested several girls. But it's fine because the show is giving us money to go and do all this grocery shopping, and we're going to take advantage of that. And it's that shiny mm-hmm. object. And they're leaving this like terrible trail of carnage.
Yeah.
Just the fact that they were forced to go on with Megyn Kelly. And
that still blows my mind. That was another moment in the book where I was like, hold, I have to pause. What did I just, I was aware of a little bit. I wasn't quite aware of that when I read it. And so I had to rewind it a little bit and listen and go, oh, wow. So no wonder these girls are, it's another reason they're so traumatized. They had to learn about their own abuse. Then their parents send him away, and we know where. When this was all happening, I feel like I've seen more of the news footage of Josh's issues than I have of 19 Kids and Counting. I can't watch it. It's too close to home for me in the way that they live and are portrayed on the show. I can't. But anytime the family would come up in the news with Josh's stuff, I was like, if they're ATI, then they were sent to one of Bill's properties. That's where he was sent. And sure enough, that's where he was sent, where he dug holes and he memorized some scripture. That does not cure you of your proclivities to incorrect actions. Like, it's you're not fixing the mental issues that are causing these problems. But this is what happens in Fundy world. Only the Bible will help. Bill, in his 80s now, is still towing this line that if you memorize and meditate on scripture every night, if you recite the word of God back to God, you can heal yourself. You can fix all of your problems.
Mm-hmm.
Again, narcissistic and just so misled that just doing that is enough for you. Y'all, it hasn't been enough for centuries. It's never going to be enough. You have to take action if you want things to change and shift. Just sitting and memorizing scripture isn't, what is that? That is so personal, just you. But sometimes people need that outside help. And that is why we have therapists and therapy. And that's why so many of us have deconstructed and moved on and removed ourselves from the damaging and harmful and toxic ways that our minds were imprinted because of this stuff that was imprinted on our minds. I remember watching the two sisters on the Megyn Kelly show, and I just couldn't, especially coming from ATI, I couldn't understand why this was happening. I guess to a degree I did, but I still did not. This should have been the parents and the parents only. But the fact that Jim Bob, because I don't think it was Bill Gothard at this point, Jim's running his own show here. The fact that Jim forced his girls to go in front of a proverbial firing squad and have to defend their brother for his obvious moral failings, and he's sitting in the room. I just can't imagine. I think of the things that have happened to me in my life, and I can't imagine the perpetrator sitting there while I defend him. Like, I'm defending him. Ugh, it's fucked up. I'll be the first to say it. It is fucked up. It is not okay. And that is not a parent loving a child. You know who they loved? Themselves. Do you know who they loved? Their reputation. Do you know what they loved? Money. Do you know what they cared about more? Josh. Mm-hmm. They did not care about those girls. All they cared about was, you are a means by which you will make our family look great again. So get out there, toe the line, do your job. You're fine. I was livid. Absolutely livid.
Yeah. I think that we should talk about the letter, because the letter is what got me to read the book in the first place. I wasn't going to read it until I heard from you, because I knew you were going to, I knew you were going to listen to it or read it. And I was like, within the first three chapters, I will hear from her in some, it's not good, it's good, don't do it. Sean is on Twitter and he saw somebody put like different parts of it up there.
Okay.
And he came into the room. I think I was editing a podcast at the time, and he was like, "Babe, you got to hear this. Did you know that her book's out?" And she must have released it early, because I thought it wasn't even going to come out until January. I was shocked that I didn't even know it had been released that day. And he was like, "I'm going to read you some stuff from it." And he started reading it. And within the first two lines of him reading some of the stuff.
Was it the mediation scene?
It might have been. I think it was also the letter. Like, she's talking about this letter. And we stop. Or he stops and he looks at me, and I was like, and all I could do is say, "Whoa." And he's, "Yeah, this is," and I finish it. And I was like, "That's my dad." And he's like, "Yeah, those letters are identical. You could put them side by side. The only difference is Jim Bob's is like 22 pages and mine is 3 paragraphs." Thank God, because I couldn't make it through 22 pages, but they're identical. I mean, it's like, is there a Christian, "I broke up with, but like my daughter's breaking up with me," ChatGPT. Like, I'm trying to figure this out, because there must be some sort of, I don't know. It's identical.
I did 4 pages. I wrote victim impact statements to my parents when I was reading the book, and she was like, 22 pages later. I was just like, 22 pages. I was like, "Stick to the high point, sweetheart." But also, holy shitesies.
I have bullet points from when I talked to my parents, but I was just thinking about the letter. You're right. Hers was 22 pages. I was thinking about the letter in return, or the email. Didn't he email her?
Email about
that was
much,
what I was. Yep.
I got you. Yeah. She writes the first letter, and they realize later, probably not the best move, because it was, and I'm sure, again, when you're newer to this, like I said, you're gonna be sloppy. Mm-hmm. And she was so upset and frustrated. She was just frustrated beyond how anyone could possibly be frustrated, right? She's so tired of it. She doesn't know how to break the glass ceiling that she's living in. And she's, "You know what? I'm just gonna put pen to paper and I'm gonna write out what the issues are." So I applaud her for that, because that's a lot of bravery.
Yeah.
You are going up against the ultimate steeled authority in your life. And he is obviously an uncaring, unloving, unwilling to listen entity in your existence. And you are about to literally shake the tree of the angry bear. And it is, she knew it was not going to go down well. I'm sure in her gut, she was probably sick to her stomach about this. And yes, his reply back was so tone deaf, so like Mr. Jim Bob business pants. He just put on his business pants and was like, "Okay, well, according to my calculator, you owe us this and da 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 da, and we'll pay you this money." And I'm like, this is transactional. This is how he saw each one of his children, a transaction, whether it was a transaction for God or a transaction financially. The fact that he would put onus on her for a harp, for medical issues, as a child under his quote umbrella of spiritual and physical care, how dare he? Yeah. How dare he say, "Oh, I'm sorry, my 19 children have been very expensive, and so now you owe me because you're not towing the line anymore." Jim Bob, sit down and learn some things, kid, because
it sucks.
You're too much. It's so gross.
It sucks. I can tell you from experience, you're rolling your eyes.
He makes me incensed with rage.
Yeah.
Truly, I rage on behalf of every single one of his kids, even the ones that are continuing to toe the line, whether it's Ginger or Jessa or Jiminy Cricket or whatever next child's name is, all the JJs, whether they stay Christian, fundamentalist, go atheist, decide to become a Satanist, like whatever their paths are, they have all been harmed and touched in a indoctrinated, controlled, narcissistic sense by Jim Bob.
They're never, I don't want to say they're never going to be the same, but they won't be. They all need therapy to help them deal with living and being raised by a narcissist. Set the religion part aside. He's narcissistic. And that level of control, no matter religion or whatnot, is so hard to break from your own mind and to break the physical chains of control. And I understand, like, that letter, reading that letter, just it just incensed me. I'm like, this is transactional, quote, love. And if she complied, she would feel love and she would stay the Jilly Muffin. But I'm so proud of her for saying, you know what? No, enough is enough. I'm not doing this. You don't get to be like this with me anymore. And in that, when you do finally stand up to the monster, you become so much stronger and you do realize that the monster is nothing but a tiny bear cub, really. Like, they lose power when we stand up to them. They no longer are as strong as they were before because you're pointing at the kinks in their armor. And this book really did that. She pointed to all the kinks in Jimmy Bob's armor.
She did a phenomenal job. I think one of the things that hit me as well is, and something that to piggyback off of what you were saying, is that it sucks when you realize that you were not held in the same place that you held that person. It is gut-wrenching when you realize that you had been holding out for this place for your parents to see you for who you are, to love you for who you are. And you have been towing that line for so many years. And then all of a sudden you realize, I'm just a pawn in this. I'm an obstacle for them to get over. Like, how can we take care of this problem? This is a problem. Like, to be labeled, she talks, she will go back to the beginning, Jilly Muffin. I was labeled the strong-willed child because I wasn't sweet Jilly Muffin. That was my older sister. Mm. And my brother, he's a male. So, you know, he's the heir to the family name.
Right.
And he's the legacy. My brother is the legacy. I was just a means.
We were pawns to continue to promote the fabulousness of our parents' raisings.
Yep.
And then you have the legacy brother, you have the perfect sister, and no fault or offense to the perfect sibling. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's also a whole lot of weight that hits on their shoulders of perfectionism. And then you've got the ones that are a little more rebellious. They push the limits. They're a little more feisty. They're not willing to completely fall in line and toe the line. And that becomes a problem for the perfect parents, for the perfect family, because now you are, again, showing the chinks in the armor that maybe they don't know how to handle every single type of personality because they're not perfect, nor are they therapists. But they don't rule by love. Because if love was a part of this equation, then there would be room and space and attention for everybody.
Yeah.
But it's all very transactional in fundy and evangelical world.
Yeah. I feel like we could spend hours just on each chapter alone because there's so much. I've been looking through it, like, just remembering everything that I had heard by looking at your notes and then talking about it. But I think what is most important, the way that I would love to end this is just acknowledging how proud I am of Jill for having the courage, the vulnerability, and the bravery to pen these words. It could not have been easy. And standing up to the person, to the institution that brought her all of this pain. I'm so proud of her. And I'm so proud of her for acknowledging that there were fun times in her life. Mm-hmm. Because that's hard. It's really hard to say, yes, that was fun. I was also raised like this. The compartmentalization that you have to do when being raised like this is extensive. And so at least for the point that she is on her journey right now, that she had the courage, bravery, and vulnerability to share that. She didn't have to share it. That's just it. She just didn't have to. And she chose to. And we should feel privileged that she chose to share that with the world.
Her book demands that we treat her with care, that we respect the journey she's on, no matter where it may end up for her. I give her mad props for the fact that she bravely told a very difficult story and did it with a lot of grace, did it with a lot of actual respect, which I was very surprised. I don't know that I would be able to write with just as much respect. I think my book is going to be a little more colorful. But I also know that, like, she's carrying a weight of millions of eyes on her.
Yes.
In a way that we will never know, I don't believe. We were not raised on TLC as a child, and people are not invested in my life like they are invested in the Duggars, and they will be invested in the Duggars for decades and the next generation that comes forward out of the children. And it's quite insane to me. But I felt like she did a service to herself. She did a service to Derek. She shed light on a lot of the issues. I love that she had her, like, Arya Stark moment where she has her list of names and she consistently gave this list of names. And at first I was like, wow, she's really hitting home on this. And then it struck me. I was like, oh no, dude, she holds these people accountable. She's holding them accountable. And even if nothing is ever done, she's holding them accountable. And she did it globally. And again, hats off to this warrior of a woman, because she's not to be messed with. And Jim Bob poked the wrong bear. She found herself and she found her voice. And that, you guys, is what therapy will do for you.
Yeah.
Therapy will help you find your voice. And she is proof that you can still remain a believer, but get yourself to therapy, not Christian counseling. Get to a therapist, because they're going to help you be able to navigate through these different, really difficult personalities and really see what's actually wrong with how you were raised. If you stay within the sound bubble in the echo chamber, which would be a Christian counselor, you're still in the echo chamber. You're not talking to someone who is removed from the situation to help you see it from a new perspective. And that is what everybody needs via therapy. But as someone who is seeking therapy, I would want to know what their faith is.
Exactly. But I think that you have to ask that.
You would have to ask it. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I saw a therapist where I said, do you have a specific belief? Because at that time, I was still deeply enmeshed inside of the evangelical world. Mm. So I wanted to know, like, am I seeing somebody who has, is it? And honestly, it would have not mattered. I still felt comfortable and safe. This person was probably the first person to really start to poke at that, though, and say, sure, they were mainlines. They were like Lutheran or Methodist, something like Episcopalian. I don't know. They could poke at that and say, actually, the Bible says this, and this is the interpretation of dot, dot, dot. So I think that regardless, it's imperative that people, I'm a huge advocate for secular therapy, because they can, in their training, most universities have an emphasis on different faith-based structures. So they would have an idea of evangelical, like the baseline of evangelicalism and how this impacts family systems and romantic relationships and the sort of the tenets of the faith. And then it's like that for Mormon and Jehovah's Witness. And you have to go through, I believe you have to go through that. So I think that I'm an advocate for secular therapy, but if you feel more comfortable with faith-based, please go see somebody that is not affiliated in any way, shape, or form with your church, because when they are in your church, their job is to retain you, because your tithe matters to them.
Yeah. So, and also they feel truly emboldened that the word of God is all you need. Yeah. That is the belief system.
Yeah.
So if the word of God is not proving to be the all-encompassing healer of what you are going through, there are other ways.
and they're not wrong to seek out. Therapists, I used to believe therapists were out there to brainwash me.
Same.
And how funny is that? That's exactly what I'm told from fundamentalists. And yet I talk to a therapist and I start to learn that the things they were doing to me were abusive and wrong, brainwashing and indoctrinating. Yeah. It's a lie. And the freedom that I have found, the shift and the change in my narrative, the strength, when I started reading her book, I was like, she is coming forth with such strength right now. This is an informed woman. This is a woman who sought help. And again, I don't profess to know what therapist she used. I don't know if they're religious of any kind, but you can tell that it is not just Christian counseling because it looks totally different. So really proud of her. Go Jill. Yeah. This is the book that I think we were all hoping Ginger's would be.
Yes.
But again, like I said, I think it's a very unique contrast to look at the two sisters raised similar, married very different husbands, and have very, very different viewpoints on how they were raised. And that's fair. It's fine. They have the right to see their lives as they want to and portray them forth as they deem fit. I just find Jill's to be the brave writing.
Yeah, I wasn't looking for salacious gossip. Mm-mm. I was looking for somebody to accurately and adequately describe what it is like to be enmeshed inside of a high control or a insular religious system, and recognize the dissonance, attack that dissonance, and come out on the other side. That's what I've been searching for. On that note, I know that you've got a packed schedule and you need to go. I'm curious I have already read it. I love it. This is one that I feel like Jill speaks so closely to what you were raised with. And then there's Shannon Harris Boone or Shannon Boone Harris. That is so much, like, I felt like my heart was left in that book. And would you want to come back and talk about that sometime in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have not read it yet. I'm still waiting for my copy. So as soon as I listen to it, I will let you know. And the other book, I was going to say, we should start this like little book club. Disobedient Women is the other book that I want to read.
And, Disobedient Women. Okay.
Yes, Disobedient Women, or Women, excuse me, by Sarah Stancorb. And it basically says how a small group of faithful women exposed abuse, brought down powerful pastors, and ignited an evangelical reckoning. And a few people that I know contributed to this. It's letters from many different women raised within evangelical and high control religion, and what they've done by standing up and speaking out. Very excited for that. But I will totally read Harris's book, and I will get back to you.
Looks like my Bible would have looked like had I cared to highlight.
That's amazing, and I love that for you.
So thank you. Thanks, thank you, man. I appreciate you. You're lovely.
Always. You too. All right.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening. Please make sure that you are kind to yourself and to others. If you are interested in supporting this show, please click the link at the bottom to my Patreon. These shows take a lot of time and resources, and any support is appreciated. If you are interested in being a guest, please email the show at focusonyourownfamilypodcast@gmail.com. Inside of the show notes, you will find the links to mine and the guests' socials. Please give us a follow. We look forward to talking with you and connecting with you.